Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Iowa Week, and our theme is Iowa, a place to grow. This hour, we're focusing on our growing division. On election night 2016, whether you were elated, devastated, or somewhere in between, the divide between urban and rural areas of Iowa was thrown into stark relief. Breaking voting down by county, 93 counties were red, 6 counties were blue. And the blue counties represent most of our state's largest cities. The political divide is easy to see, but we think there's more to this story. In this hour, we're going to explore Iowa's growing division in economic, political, and social terms. We also want to hear from you. We don't want to hear what you think about the other people, what's wrong with the other people. We want to know about your life and your experience, what you think others don't understand. And you can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to start with a visit to West Liberty, Iowa. Iowa Public Radio's Catherine Perkins went there yesterday to get a small town perspective, and she asked business owners and employees about the benefits of small town living.
Well, since it's such a small town, I'm able to work here and live less than a block away, so I can walk to work, and that's what I like about it. So I have more resources here. I have family, I have friends, and so I have support.
So for me, I mean, living in a small town has given us, it definitely does feel cozy in a sense. There's affordability factor to it. It's great to, buy a house, buy an office building downtown for, you know, much less than we would in a larger city.
We're the hardware store, the lawn and garden store, the feed store, the pet food store, filled a lot of niches, which is another nice thing about small town people. They are very loyal, and that's one reason why we're in business. We got the best customers in the world.
We have people that come at least maybe 3 times a week, so when we take their order, we already know what they want to drink, already what they want to order, so they love that. They love to know that we know them pretty well.
That was Crystal Fernandez, who works at El Patio Restaurant, Bruce Miller at Fred's Feed and Supply, Ethan Anderson, owner of Big Imprint, a web design company, and Shelley Gibbs. They all live and work in West Liberty. And we're going to talk about economics here. Dave Swenson is here. He's an associate scientist in the Department of Economics at Iowa State University. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
And we just heard some of the economic and quality of life benefits of living in a small town in Iowa, some things that those of us in larger communities might not think about, and things that aren't really reflected in the kind of changes we're seeing in small towns in Iowa.
Well, yes, and many of our small towns in Iowa look and feel good, even though, you know, lots of them have been losing population. They're nonetheless good places to live, good places to do business, good places to raise their children. There's a lot of variability in the health and well-being of many of our small town rural areas. Those that are closer to growth centers, like Iowa City, like Ames, like Des Moines, they look and feel a little bit healthier. Those that are farther away perhaps struggle a little bit more in terms of their overall well-being and their access to good jobs. So we have a mixed bag. It's a mistake to think of just rural and urban in Iowa. There's lots of shades and grades and differences in the state, and there's even regional differences. And so exploring that and understanding that helps us get a handle on, you know, the consequences of change, the consequences of the long-term economic transformations that have happened in much of rural Iowa, and what those consequences have meant for households and for communities.
Well, let's take a look at some of those long-term changes that we have seen in particular in rural Iowa. Let's start there, because we've certainly seen a change in farming, where there are fewer small farms, fewer farms that can support a family in rural Iowa, and the repercussions of that have been far-reaching.
Of course. Farming has become much more mechanically and chemically intensive over time, requiring lots more land, per operation, taking advantage of economies of scale, and that has shed a lot of labor that used to be associated with farming. And it's not just that farms have gotten larger, it's farming has changed, again, because it has a different mix of mechanical, chemical, and even biological inputs. It needs less labor to support it as well. And so that labor has to go someplace. And, you know, to the degree that that labor can be used regionally, that labor will find uses regionally. But oftentimes in rural areas, their economies are not diverse enough. There are not enough opportunities, and it forces people to either out-commute or ultimately, and more often is the case too, to out-migrate.
And of course, the jobs that depend on people in the rural area having jobs to support them, they're impacted too. I mean, we've seen that on small town Main Street for decades.
Of course, and you always get the multiplier effect. And what you're talking about is the household spending that results from employment. And the less employment you have in the region, that's one thing, the less income. But we also have increased regional competition for trade, meaning that over the last 25, 30 years, a lot of what used to be taken for granted, small town trade, hardware stores, lumber mills, grocery stores, any number of things, clothing stores, have become not viable or marginally viable, and they have shifted to the next larger places, whether it's the county seat, or we have about 17 regional trade centers that aren't metros in the state of Iowa. So it's a combination of the local economy, but it's also a combination of regional competition and concentration of sales and economic activity in fewer places.
So, and we've always seen young people moving out of wherever they grew up, as far as, you know, looking for broader horizons, looking for new adventures. But the economic shifts in rural Iowa have really strengthened that trend.
Yes, they have. There's two dimensions to this as well. First of all, young people, especially young people that were motivated to either go to college or to go out and see the world, always migrated out of rural areas. I migrated out of rural areas. Most of us who grew up in rural areas migrated out for one reason or another. But over time, as job opportunities became less diverse in rural areas, you also then have people out migrating later in life. And what we found out, for example, last decade, and it's very surprising, but we had very strong rates of population decline compared to the previous decade of people who are 35 to 44. Now, these are people that have reasonably good skills. They're people that have been in the workforce for a while. They have children. They were your emerging maybe leaders in your small communities, and we find that out-migration rates, were very, very high in the rural areas for that population. And so, yes, we've always lost our youth, but if we extend the definition of youth up to, you know, age 35 to 44, we're also losing a good fraction of our skilled workers.
And their children.
And their children, you're exactly right. You get the echo from that.
All right, well, let's look at the flip side of this. Let's look at Iowa's metropolitan areas. They have been growing fast in recent decades.
Oh, yes, they have. And they explain the preponderance of growth that's occurred in the state of Iowa. As a matter of fact, if you look at the state of Iowa's growth over the last decade, I'm going to compare it to right before the recession, the Great Recession. The state of Iowa has grown a little over 3% it's close to 4% in population. Metros have grown close to 8% in population, and that means that the non-metros have contracted as a group. And so, indeed, the metropolitan areas were adding population at twice the rate as the state average.
So with our metropolitan areas thriving and people being attracted, obviously that continues to snowball as well. When an area is doing well, more people want to be a part of that. But I think that also gets to part of the divide that we're seeing. I mean, if you live and work in a place where it feels like everyone is leaving or wanting to leave, your outlook's going to be really different than if you live and work in a place where it feels like everybody wants to be there.
Yes, I agree very much with that conclusion. If you live in the urban areas, especially the metropolitan areas like Des Moines, like Ames, like Iowa City, you see a lot of growth. You see new houses being added. You see lots of new businesses starting. You see a range of opportunities, whether it's for entertainment or employment or other types of things. And if you go out in many of the rural areas, you're very aware of the struggle on Main Street and the difficulty of finding new businesses and the difficulty of finding daycare and the fact that no one's built houses recently and that the housing stock is starting to stagnate. Those differences become very evident, and you have to believe that those differences also affect strongly people's outlook, not just their general outlook politically, but their outlook much more broadly in terms of their overall well-being.
So if you were to ask somebody living in Des Moines about the state of Iowa, their take on the state of Iowa might be radically different from someone living in one of those communities that's far enough away from a metro area to not feel any of the kind of trickle-down benefits.
I agree with that. And because much of our media and much of our political perspectives are drawn from a metropolitan advantage, a metropolitan perspective. I think that that makes it so that much of Iowa, a significant portion of Iowa, is virtually unaware of the situation, the condition, and some of the struggles that exist out in the more rural parts of Iowa.
Well, we're going to talk more about politics in a few minutes, and you are going to stay with us, Dave, so we can talk some more economics as well. Dave Swenson, an associate scientist in the Department of Economics at Iowa State University. We also want to hear from you. We want to hear your thoughts. We got this email from Wayne. He says, I think that public policy decisions that make sense in a densely populated area do not always make sense in more rural areas. The opposite is also true. Also, there's a general feeling that Democrats care only for urban voters and anyone out in the country must be uneducated and backward. It's hard to vote blue when anytime you hear the blue candidates and pundits on TV and social media, they're talking down to you and saying how terrible you are. Rural voters are aware that their lives are interconnected with the people who live in cities. People in cities sometimes seem to forget that their way of life is made possible by people in rural areas doing what they do. It's a symbiotic relationship, and we will talk more about that and the divisions in Iowa in just a few minutes. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Iowa Week, and this hour we're exploring growing division in our state, economically, politically, socially. We want to hear your thoughts at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talks and email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we want to hear about your experience. What do you think people need to understand about where you live and how you think in your part of Iowa? We are not nearly as interested in finding out what you think is wrong with the other side, but we would love to hear your story. 866-780-9100. I want to get back to that political map for just a moment that we talked about, the red and the blue. And the division isn't just urban and rural. We all know people who have different political viewpoints from our own, but in the wake of the last election, we've also been hearing a lot of stories about people cutting those with different viewpoints out of their social media feeds and even out of their lives. So again, we wanted a small town perspective on this. We asked people in West Liberty whether or not they have friends they don't agree with.
I have a friend who is a Trump supporter, and I'm not, but we're still friends. You know, that doesn't change anything. Whereas in, like, maybe in a big city, they wouldn't be your friend anymore.
Oh, definitely. Since we're such a multicultural town, there's just so many different opinions on everything. But, you know, you learn that in a small town, you have to respect everyone's opinion and you have to kind of work together as a small town to keep it going.
I think that we live in a really divisive time in our country right now. Something that I think is missing is the discussion part. It's like, I'm right and you're wrong, or you're right and I'm wrong, or, you know, there's, you know, 0 and 100 are options, but 2 through 99 are also options. And we need to see the 2 to 99 a lot more than the 0 and 100.
That was Dylan Hillier, Lisa Newcomb, and Shelley Gibbs in West Liberty. And joining me now is Chris Larimer, an associate professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Charity.
And research shows what people are feeling, that these divisions are growing, right, between so-called Republicans and so-called Democrats.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's just another report out this month from the Pew Research Center showing that the gap, the partisan gap, as they call it, between Republicans and Democrats is at its largest level that it's ever been. And they do that across 10 different issues. And so, yeah, you're seeing that within the electorate, but you're also seeing that within government. You're seeing that within the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate, where you have Democrats and Republicans just getting further and further apart.
Well, and we could talk about how the parties are shifting, but that's a conversation for River to River, not on Talk of Iowa. So we'll do that another time. But, you know, I was just talking to Dave Swenson about the demographic shifts that we see in rural Iowa. So where we might see a rural-urban divide, it's the demographic shifts that really play into this political divide, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you think, I mean, if you look at party registration in Iowa, there are very clear trends there over the last 15, 20 years where you have the northwest, southwest corners of the state as being the most Republican parts of the state, particularly northwest Iowa with Sioux County, O'Brien County up in the northwest corner. Those are very Republican parts of the state. But as you mentioned and as Dave discussed, those are also very rural parts of the state. And to the research that Dave was talking about, this is absolutely critical for political scientists. If, you know, he's finding that the out-migration is extending not, as you said, just for young voters, but for voters all the way up to 44. That's the group that you would expect to be more likely to identify with the on the Democratic side of the political spectrum, or maybe even lean left, particularly those younger voters. But if that group of voters is leaving, and they're leaving the rural parts of the state, what you would expect to see is probably those parts of the state to become even more conservative, even more Republican, but their proportional weight in any statewide election is going to go down. If the urban parts of the state are growing, and as Dave mentioned, at a rate, the metro areas at a rate of 8%, you know, if what we know about politics and where people live and their likelihood of being registered with a particular party holds true, then you would expect to see that those urban parts of the state are going to have more weight in statewide elections. And in fact, if you look at, you know, any statewide election or even party registration, you can break it down to about 9 or 10 counties in Iowa. Those big urban counties are going to have half the registered voters in the state, or they're going to have, that's where half the winning votes are going to come from. And so there's, Iowa's political geography is very, very imbalanced. You know, we think of Iowa as a swing state, but really within the state, it's very imbalanced. You have pockets that are very red, pockets that are very blue, and you have counties that carry a tremendous amount of weight in elections.
Well, and talking about the divide between Republicans and Democrats getting deeper, we heard Dylan from West Liberty say a few minutes ago, it's like it's 1 or 100, and we don't ever talk about 2 to 99.
Yeah.
When you actually break it down issue by issue, there's a lot less division, right?
Oh, sure, but people don't think about it in terms of the details of issues. That's the same thing when you think about Obamacare, and then you start to pull out the details of Obamacare about pre-existing conditions or staying on your parents' health care till they're age 26 or any number of issues. Once you ask people about the details of issues, there's actually a lot more agreement. The division becomes is that people rely on partisan identification. And for a lot of people, they don't want to think about politics. It's not something that's comfortable to think about. You know, Catherine had those interviews at the very beginning of the show from West Liberty where people talked about the coziness or the comfort that comes from living within a small town. Those are not terms I associate with politics. People aren't comfortable with politics or feel cozy talking about politics. And so those divisions and getting people to think really about the details and to pay close attention to the politics, a lot of people just don't want to do that. I mean, when you ask people about Congress, one of the big things they dislike about Congress is just what they see as their inability to compromise, the constant bickering. I don't see a real way out of these deep divisions. And on top of all of that, you know, what this election cycle is what we've seen discussed a lot since the November election is this notion of tribal politics, that people are very groupish. Well, that's basic psychology, that people tend to sort into in-group and out-group. The issue with politics is that it's become a lot easier to be partisan, right? You can sort your news in a particular way. You can sort your social media in a particular way so you don't have to hear the other side's view, right? Psychologists have for a long time talked about confirmation bias. Well, the way that news media is structured now or social media is structured now is that you can that confirmation bias is has a huge effect on your political beliefs and the way that you sort political information.
Let's talk a little bit about voter behavior, because you talked about identification with a party. And through history, there was a long time when straight ticket voting was very common. It declined a little bit, but it's on the rise again, right?
Yeah. And again, partisan identification, if you had one variable to predict the outcome of an election, you would use partisan identification because it's such a stable part of someone's identity, right? It's part of who you are as a person. That partisan identification is not going to go away. We're not going to see those divisions go away. I just really struggle figuring out a way out of this for any state. And when you're talking about Iowa, where you have such an imbalanced political geography, you're going to continue to see those divisions. And what's difficult about Iowa is that Iowa is still a swing state. But back to Dave's point about the way that the population is sorting, within the state, those divisions are going to get, I think, even greater.
We're seeing a lot of that division on the national level as mm-hmm. well. When we hear Iowa politicians talking, often it feels like they are just taking a page from whoever the national representatives that we're hearing from are as well. We're hearing a lot of the same talking points. So do you see this divide trickling down into our state legislature as well?
Yes, I do. And I think you're already seeing evidence of that. There are political scientists who track not only polarization at the federal level, but are tracking it at the state level. And Iowa isn't becoming increasingly more polarized. You're seeing more party line votes, and you're seeing that within state legislative campaigns as well, where they're becoming more professionalized. You're seeing tremendous amounts of money being spent at the state legislative level. And, you know, there's actually an article out in the American Political Science Review, the latest issue of that, which is kind of the flagship journal for political science. And a scholar there tracked state legislative votes over time and was looking at whether or not a state legislator voted against his or her own constituents over a period of 10 years for 47 states and what effect did that have on their reelection rate. Well, it had a small effect. But it didn't have a big effect. So you had state legislators who were essentially voting against the will of their constituents who saw maybe a slight decrease in the number of votes they were receiving, but it did not have any effect on their reelection rate.
Huh.
So what I mean, that tells you that it's party politics, it's polarization, it's partisanship, and the issues aren't mattering as much.
Well, and we're hearing a lot on the national level talking about gerrymandering and mm-hmm. these districts that, yeah. Have been designed to stay red forever.
Yeah.
In Iowa, do we have this issue where we have districts that have been gerrymandered by one party or another?
Well, no. And this is a great question. I was actually talking to my colleague Scott Peters about this on the walk over to the studio today. Political scientists are not in agreement with a lot of other people who say that gerrymandering is the fundamental problem with polarization. You can look at Iowa. We have a nonpartisan, the Legislative Services Agency, a nonpartisan agency that draws up the districts in Iowa, but we still have polarization. We still have Steve King, who is very polarized on the right? And you still have Dave Lobsack in the second district, who's going to continue to win re-election. But as Scott and I were talking, you can look at Iowa as an example there. You can look at the United States Senate, that has become more polarized, but it's not as though, that there's any gerrymandering with the United States Senate. Each state has two Senate seats. That's it. U.S. Senate seats. You can look at just the fact that people are becoming, it's much easier to be partisan. You can look at the number of safe seats versus competitive seats. So gerrymandering is not going to, if everybody tries to go to the nonpartisan process that Iowa has, or other states like California have tried to reform the way that district lines are drawn, you're not going to necessarily see a decrease in polarization. That's not the answer to what we see as increased levels of polarization. It's not in gerrymandering. It's not necessarily in the way you draw district lines.
I want to ask you, as a professor, as a person living in a community, and someone I assume people talk politics with you all the time, yeah. Do you feel, we just heard people talking about, okay, I have a friend who supports somebody from the other party, but we're still friends. Are you feeling that division growing in your personal life or in your classroom?
Not as much. You know, I don't see it quite as much in some of those conversations. I mean, some of the conversations, if someone comes up and you talk to them on the street, you know, they seem to be a little bit more willing to share who they voted for in the last election as a way to kind of, I think, direct the conversation in a certain way.
It's a shorthand.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a shorthand a little bit. But I think what would be interesting, thinking about the interview there, and I don't think we have research on this yet, is the extent to which people have friends of the opposite party and how that varies by the size of the community in which they live. I think that would be a really interesting study to do, to look at, you know, are you, in larger communities, are you able to self-sort in a way that you don't have to run into other people who you know are affiliated with the opposite party? In smaller towns, as the interviewer or interviewee suggested, you know, they do see these people all the time, so they have to think about what that person thinks about in terms of politics. Because the trend nationally, at least among political scientists, what we've identified is this notion of negative partisanship. It's not just that you identify with a particular political party yourself, it's that you dislike the other party. That's what's driving your identity in politics, is that your dislike for the other party. And it would be interesting to see the extent to which that negative partisanship, or that feeling of negative partisanship, varies across the size of a community.
I'm talking with Chris Larimer, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Also, Dave Swenson is here with us, an Associate Scientist in the Department of Economics at Iowa State University. And Paul Lasley is also here, Professor of Sociology at Iowa State University, one of the nation's leading experts on rural sociology, and uncharacteristically quiet so far this hour. Hello, Paul.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And so, you know, we've talked about the economics, we've talked about the politics, and I want both Chris and Dave to stay and weigh in as we hear from a lot of callers as well. But from the perspective of a sociologist, Chris was treading into that territory a little bit in talking about how maybe in these urban areas, the political divisions are deeper because we can make them deeper. But looking at the state of Iowa, when you think about the urban-rural divide, you find a lot of irony there, don't you?
Well, I certainly do. But I want to clarify one thing, the statement you made just a moment ago. The reason why I've been so quiet is that you guys had my microphone shut off. No, actually, I've really enjoyed hearing Dave and Chris, because I think that they are clearly identifying some of the fundamental issues in state as well as national politics, and this growing issue of partisanship and the division. You know, I don't want to wade in too far, but I actually think that in some ways this extreme partisanship that we're seeing is being driven by the social media. It's one thing to disagree with a person if you're sitting across the table from them, but you know some limits, and you can read body language, and you can see the reaction, and when you're facing someone face-to-face, it may temper your partisanship a bit. But with social media, where you can about say anything to, rude, crude, and inappropriate on social media, and I see an awful lot of what I would say is unacceptable sort of civility. And I worry about the extent to which social media and fake news and alternative news and things that would have likely got my mouth washed out with lye soap of my grandmother only a few decades ago is now acceptable. So I think that's one thing. I think a second issue that troubles me greatly is what I'd call the culture of distrust. And unfortunately, I think we've got a lot of political leaders that have been sowing the seeds of distrust. It's when people perceive that they are disadvantaged, or when they're unable to achieve the American dream because the system is rigged, it fuels this sense of them versus us. Now, some of the trends that Dave and Chris pointed out are objective sort of facts. of differential opportunities, the differential growth rates in rural, urban. That's an indicator of a lot of other things that are going on. You think about property ownership and asset values. If you live in a high growth community, you get the benefits of property appreciation versus stagnant values in lesser growth communities.
And we'll talk more about that in just a moment. We're going to take a short break. With me, Paul Lasley, professor of sociology at Iowa State University, Dave Swenson, associate scientist in the Department of Economics at Iowa State, and Chris Larimer, associate professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Iowa Week. Our theme this week is Iowa, a place to grow. And this hour, we're focusing on growing division in this state. And as we've heard, Iowa's urban areas are growing. Our rural areas are shrinking. Young people in particular are leaving small towns. But there can be a lot to love about small town living. We asked people in West Liberty what they like about living in a small town.
Everyone's nice to each other, and it's a really small town, so you can just pretty much cruise it all in less than 10 minutes, and you see the same people every day, and it's just nice to be like, say hello every day, because you know who they are. I feel like people in bigger cities might not have as much conversation with the people around them, because they don't really see them often. You really see different people every day, but here in West Liberty, you see the same people every day, so it's nice to know the people who you live around.
I like it because everyone's so friendly, you know the people, and there's like this bond, you know, like if anyone has a crisis or there's something going on in their life, you have so many people. It's like an extended family that they're always there for you to support you and help you through any time and you need it.
That you can walk out your front door and your neighbor's going to wave at you and they're going to know your name, they're going to know your kids' names, they're going to know your dog's name, that you can walk into the store and with your kids and the person behind the counter is going to know your kid's name and say hi to him and maybe give him a sucker or a dum-dum and ask if your dog's in the truck and see if it wants a biscuit. You know, and I think just the idea of that it's almost like a big extended family in a small town.
That was Bruce Miller, Lisa Newcomb, and Crystal Fernandez from West Liberty. And going along with that conversation about seeing people, talking to people that you disagree with, Paul Lasley was mentioning that a few minutes ago, but I want to go to Michael on the phone in Keokuk County. Hi, Michael. Michael, are you there? I think we've lost Michael, but he is a county supervisor, and he's the only Democrat for four terms. He thinks working with other people is important. And, you know, Paul, you were just talking about that. Paul Lasley, professor of sociology at Iowa State University, that when we're face to face with people, we have to talk with them and get along with them.
Yeah. One of the great ironies is many of the people that David talked about that have migrated to metro areas actually have roots in agriculture and rural places. And so what's happening? Why is it? Is it because they've changed their values because they moved to an urban place? I don't think so. But I think it does relate to some of the issues that Chris mentioned, that the insularity that occurs without migration. As I listened, I was somewhat struck by Dave's comments. We're now defining youth as people up to the age of 40. My goodness, I'm just barely over the youth category.
Yeah, I'm feeling younger by the second.
but you know, the reality is much of the strength of Iowa has been the result of collective action of working together, whether it's in rural or urban places. If you go back to the settlement period of building drainage ditches, of roads, of streets, of the infrastructure, whether it's telephone lines or farm-to-market roads or grain elevators, it was because people worked together. We have seemingly lost that sense of common good for lack of a better term, I call extreme individualism. It's when people decide that they no longer need a neighbor, or they need the group or the community. And so one of the issues that, and hopefully this will cause some reflection, and maybe Dave and Chris will want to comment, I think we need to be focusing on what are that core set of values that bind us together as a state. And I don't have a complete list, but those tend to be the things that we should be able to work together on. Such things as health care, of education, care for the elderly and the poor, water quality, environmental quality, the issue of quality of life, of decent housing and food. Those really should be, I think, that priority agenda items for government, is to provide, to ensure that we have that acceptable standard of living, quality of life for all Iowans. And if we could just come to, if we could just focus on those, some of these very volatile, inflammatory, partisan issues would be further down the agenda, and hopefully, and maybe even go away. I'd be interested in Dave and Chris, but I think some of the divisiveness has been about issues that should not be high priority issues.
Interesting. Well, and yesterday we talked about growing problems in Iowa, and pretty much every one of those issues that you said you think we can all agree on as being important are also the things that are growing problems in the state.
Mm-hmm.
I want to read an email from Allison. She says, I believe citizens who reside in heavily populated urban areas think that the resources available to them are available to rural residents. This is not the case. For example, rural folks no longer have unemployment services available in person outside of approximately 16 cities in the state and have to travel to the handful of centers that are in the cities for mandatory in-person appointments. Our medical providers who will take insurance are hard to find. Transportation services. The barriers people have in rural communities resemble those in metro and urban areas, except without public service options. And they're getting fewer and fewer with reductions of programs and staff available. I think that that's a really important issue that she brings up. And Dave Swenson, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. I mean, we do see that services are a lot harder to access in rural areas of Iowa.
Yep, they're harder to access, both state-supported, state-delivered, as well as locally supported and delivered. And as rural areas struggle with growth or property tax values stagnate, the ability to underwrite local government services becomes harder and harder, and the burden increases for those folks that are left there. We've also gone through a cycle here in Iowa where cutting state services in the name of efficiency, or what other adjective you want to use, has been relatively important. And like she said, with regard to access and to some basic state services, just think of something like trying to get a driver's license in some of these places. It's very, very hard to do. This is important, but you know, the dynamics of change have this has been a 25, 30 year transformation where it's really become acute and where we can see things. Many people live in rural places, but they're very highly likely working someplace else. They're commuting out, and it could be a husband and wife, a family. Somebody's commuting north 30 miles, and somebody's commuting east 30 miles. And some of the towns in Iowa, they're perfectly good towns, but I swear, you could take a nap on Main Street at noon and not get run over. They're absolutely empty of people during the day. And that gets back to the inability of people to get along, to interact in a normal way, because their focus has now been shifted out of the community. Their attention spans are shifted out of the community. It could very well be that their kids aren't even being educated in the community. And those normal things that glue people together in a community have been stretched and pulled apart, and make it harder for people to not just solve problems, but to actually care about the issues that are bothering them or that are they're struggling with.
Well, and this seems like the perfect time to bring Chris Larimer, our political scientist, back into the conversation as well. I mean, some of the things that Dave was just talking about, some of the things that Allison was talking about in her email, there's this frustration that you hear people say, I don't understand why someone would vote against their own self-interest. And we see that there's a political party that focuses more on services, and mm-hmm. there's a political party that doesn't, that wants to cut spending on those services. And so we look at a rural area and think, well, if you don't have services, why would you be voting for someone who wants to cut the services? So people are not voting on those issues.
No, and think about what that disparity in the availability of services does for people's orientation toward government and their feelings of trust in government. I mean, there is research out there to suggest that, you know, the way in which people interact with government affects their views of government, affects what they think that the government thinks of them. So if you're in a rural community and you're driving a long way for basic services or struggling, you know, as driver's license or struggling for internet access, or if you're receiving some sort of governmental benefit, and it's a very difficult process, and yet you know that people in more urban areas have better access to those services, it's easier to interact with real human beings in those services, your orientation toward government is going to be quite negative. You're not going to feel really great about government. And so, and if you think about that in terms of partisanship, you know, if you think of the Democratic Party as being about big government and the Republican Party as being about less government, maybe you're more likely to identify with the Republican Party or be more sympathetic because you just distrust government generally. You are frustrated by your own interactions with government, and maybe even you're less likely to participate in government. And so this phenomenon has been around for a long time, and Paul and Dave are familiar with it, but there's a book by Thomas Frank, you know, What's the Matter with Kansas? That's what it's talking about. It's talking about these rural areas or farmers who are voting against their own economic interests, who are voting against the Democratic Party, the party more likely to increase subsidies for farms.
I want to read an email or a comment from Bill in Iowa City. He said, I live in Iowa City with an advanced degree, but I farm in rural Iowa conventionally. I value intellectual discussion in Iowa City, but there's a condescension toward farmers and a dislike of conventional farming and a lack of curiosity about what it really is. I experience a lot of elitism. There are positives, but there are negatives. And Paul, I have been struck by this. I mentioned this just the other day. I talked to a lot of farmers who farm in different kinds of ways in Iowa. And I find that among farmers, no matter how they farm, there's a lot more that they have in common than they have that are different. But people who consume these products perceive a much greater division. Do you think that that's driving this as well?
Well, certainly it contributes to it. You know, I hear the same conversations that you're tuned into. In some ways, it's a real lack of communication and understanding. You know, I hear the oftentimes the scenario, well, farmers out there own all this land that's valued at $8,000 to $10,000 an acre, so they're millionaires. Their assets keep going up, and I'm struggling at $12 or $15 an hour, barely making ends meet. And then I talk to farmers, and they say, gee, I wished I had a steady income and the health care benefits. You know, and I'm saying, wait a minute, folks, we can't really compare apples and oranges. And we need to have this discussion. But I think it is, in some cases, absolutely real inequality that people are reacting to of differential opportunities. In other cases, it's perceptions that it's better on the other side. Whoever the other side is has it better.
And it's not fair.
And it's not fair. You know, the other thing that I've sort of been toying with over the last several months and trying to understand this is how do people react when they're no longer able to achieve the American dream? Now, Iowans and Midwesterners always prided themselves on hard work, but what happens when you work hard but you still can't get your foot on the ladder to achieve the American dream? And I think what we've got on both urban and rural is a number of people that work very hard that are not getting ahead. And in many cases, they blame government. Either they're paying too much taxes or government's not providing them the services they believe that they are entitled to, that other people have services that they don't get. And again, it's this perception in some cases, in other cases, where we need to have a dialogue about what Iowans want and sort of reduce the rhetoric, the partisanship, and how do we go about restoring trust in social institutions that bring people of diversity together? And government is just but one, but it's also in education, it's in service clubs, it's in hospitals and schools and libraries and churches where people of diverse backgrounds come together. And what I see is really that tearing of that social fabric that has led to this significant gap in understanding or appreciation or tolerance or acceptance, which has resulted then in people taking extreme positions, oftentimes unyielding positions, rather than saying, well, let me consider your perspective or your thoughts.
I want to mention that we don't have time to go back to the phones because we're nearly out of time. But Chris in Des Moines says the conversation about racism is missing from this conversation. It goes on here in Iowa and it affects this divide. And when we look at the diversity of larger communities versus smaller communities, there's definitely a divide there that we need to explore. But here with about a minute and a half left to talk about it, I want to ask each one of you, when you look into the future, do you see a path forward that brings us closer together? Chris Larimer.
Not in the immediate future. I think as long as it's easy to continue to be partisan and it's to sort into those partisan groups, I think overcoming that, getting people to look outside their partisan lens is going to be extraordinarily difficult.
Chris Larimer, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Dave Swenson, as an economist, but also as an Iowan, what do you think looking forward?
Well, looking forward, it's somewhat pessimistic. Two-thirds of our counties are going to continue to contract. Two-thirds of our towns are going to contract. But they're not dying. What we're looking at is helping these places become stable and helping them achieve and or receive the basic services and goods and services that they need to be good, healthy, desirable places to live.
Dave Swenson, thank you. Dave Swenson's an associate scientist in the Department of Economics at Iowa State University. And Paul, you get the last word. So looking in the future, are you optimistic?
I think so. While I don't disagree with Chris and Dave, you know, my sense is that the debate has gotten to the point where now people are beginning to say, wait a minute, this is not the direction we want our state and our country to go. Where are those elements where we can build bridges across? And I'm working with some groups now on the race issue, the ethnic diversity in Iowa. I believe that Iowans are getting tired of the very divisive rhetoric, and I'm going to continue to push that we build bridges across that.
Paul Lasley, thank you. Paul Lasley, Professor of Sociology at Iowa State University. This is Iowa Week on Talk of Iowa. We were talking about division in the state of Iowa, growing division here in Iowa today. Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.